Welcome back to the Red Debate, and we have today a Naby Keïta special. Now, I know we've already done a Naby Keïta special before, but we will introduce what we're going to talk about shortly. But first, I'm Tom Vergis, and I've got with me Chris. All right, mate?
You all right, Tom? How's it going?
Yeah, good. Thank you, mate. Good. Just got over a bout of man flu, but back to fighting fitness now. So.
Savage bout of man flu, eh?
It was a heavy one. It was a heavy one, yeah. But yeah, cleared for the airways now.
Good stuff.
So do you want to talk about Naby Keïta then? It's a topic we've been asked about a fair bit since he's arrived.
Yeah, it's a meaty topic, isn't it? And I think when you mentioned it just then, but when we first did the Naby Keïta podcast of, you know, he's finally signed for us. For me personally, it was a very different feeling to what I currently feel. What about yourself?
Well, I mean, we'll come to it, won't we? But just to set the tempo for this one, I've decided to chair one side of the debate whilst Chris chairs the other. The side of the debate that I'm going to lead on is the pro Naby Keïta argument and the reasons not to worry and the reasons for excitement, which remain for me, if I'm honest, from that time in July when we, 1st of July, obviously, when he was officially a Liverpool player after having agreed the deal the year before. Yeah, go on. What I mean, you've been less impressed than I have, shall we say. Do you want to?
Yeah, so I think it's safe to say that he definitely made a strong start at the club. A couple of decent performances, particularly the West Ham performance, which as a team as well, we were a lot better in that game than we have been in recent weeks. And he played pretty well, particularly in the first half against Crystal Palace. But since then, there's been a bit of a nosedive, and I'm actually pretty concerned about Keïta now. And I think with the strike force slightly misfiring and zero goals coming from the midfield, we're now in a bit of a position where we're looking at players like Keïta to come in and make a big impact, particularly with goals and assists, and he's just not doing so. And if anything, it's actually getting worse, his performances.
Yeah. I mean, I do see what you're saying. The first thing that is worth noting in my mind is that there's kind of like, particularly in the case of a player who we bought a year before, there's the sort of coming together of hope and expectation about these players. Now, obviously, every Liverpool fan is hoping that you're going to sign a superstar player. But I've got to say, I think in Naby Keïta's case, I think a lot of us were expecting to as well. He was talked up a lot. Asked about it.
The two of us are a prime example of that. We spent ages watching the Leipzig games, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. We did this bloody Naby Keïta podcast before we'd ever watched him play for Liverpool, and we were dead excited about him at the time.
I mean, he looked dynamite, though, didn't he, last season? And what I will say is that it's hard to judge a player on the Bundesliga form because...
Of course it is. Well, we watched him in the Champions League and Europa League as well.
That's true, yeah.
So, I mean, the points you make about Keïta are the important ones for me. He did start really well, and what comes to my mind is that his performances seem a bit almost syndromic of the entire team. For me, the West Ham game was our most convincing performance this season. I know West Ham didn't start the season fantastically, and they had a lot of new players to bed in, but we were excellent that day, and I thought Keïta was one of our better players. I thought you and I were both getting texts, even up to the Tottenham game, from friends saying, "Bloody hell, Naby Keïta looks like a real player."
Yeah.
Yeah. Particularly after the sort of match of the day flashes that happened in the Palace game.
I think at that stage of his start, though, he was taking out way more advanced positions. And I think as his confidence has gone, and the run of games has become harder, he's gradually taking the ball a lot deeper than he was earlier in the season. Because even against Spurs, he was getting, you know, onto the edge of the box and creating chances.
I think our whole team is doing that. I think our starting position is far deeper this season. I mean, we're not playing as high up the pitch, which is odd given that Van Dijk and Gomez are playing centre-back. I think we tweeted out during the Leicester game, at the beginning of the season, it looked like we were camping in the opposition's thirds a lot more than we have been doing in recent weeks. And I mean, there has been an argument that it's kind of something systematic or tactical that Klopp's arranged. Against Huddersfield, it looked like we weren't pressing at all. And now I know Keïta didn't play, but your point about Keïta sort of operating far deeper than he had done in early games could be a tactical thing.
I agree. I mean, it was particularly noticeable in that Chelsea game that in the Carabao Cup.
See, I thought he was really good then.
Yeah, but if you look at where he was receiving the ball, it was so deep. It was almost like the deep, deep left centre midfielder position.
Yeah, I mean, he looked like he was playing auxiliary left back at times, notably against City. Like, if you'd looked at his heat map, it would have looked like he could have even been playing as a left back at times there.
Yeah, which is not what you would see. You'd associate the positive side of Naby Keita is driving through the middle of the pitch with the ball, which is what I expected to see more of, because that is what I think he can bring to the team. Because, you know, you got Milner and Gini Wijnaldum and Henderson who don't have that ability to surge with the ball. So on a positive side of Keita, I do think he has the ability to do that. But I just think he's stuck in that kind of, I'd almost describe it as a lost position at the moment, where he doesn't really know what he's doing and he's not getting the ball in the positions that I think he wants to be in. And then because his confidence is low, he's then making the wrong decisions even when he does drive forward with the ball. And there's been numerous instances throughout the season where, you know, it's been an easy either left or right pass and he's made the wrong pass, or he's shot. And I mean, his shooting for me has been a real disappointment. It looks like he can't strike the ball that cleanly.
He's had a few where he should have scored. The Palace game, he should have scored. He flicks one wide of the, not flicks it, but puts one wide of the left post. The Tottenham one where Mane was getting slaughtered by all the Salah fanboys when Mane, Salah and Keita all go through and Keita sort of just dollies it with his left. That was poor.
Such a tame effort.
But do you not think that, like, he looked like our most lively player against Chelsea in the Cup. He has the shot which leads to the Sturridge goal. He tested Caballero early on in the game. I mean... Yeah. I do get your point about him looking lost, but I don't really particularly think that's something we can hold against Naby Keita in terms of how we judge his start, because the job Klopp's asked of his midfielders is quite a different one.
That's true. But what we can hold against him is that we've signed a player for over 50 million. He's got zero assists. He's got zero goals. He's now not really a guaranteed starter already. He's kind of in and out of the team at the moment, albeit obviously he had an injury setback on international duty. In terms of key passes, had a quick look on his Who Scored stats, and he's averaging 0.4 a game in the Premier League anyway. I mean, he's only played the Napoli game in the Champions League, and that was...
Which he was fucking awful in.
Absolutely.
Don't mind me saying. Like, there were all sorts of rumours going around about what the back injury was about. There were corners of the fan base saying it was because he was embarrassed about his performance, so he just bottled it.
It wasn't intended to be injured, wasn't it?
He was bad. He was bad in that. He tried one ridiculous thing where he tries to flip the... I think it was probably... I don't know who it was over. Maybe Callahan or Milik or someone. Like that, and he's tried to just flip the ball over the striker's head and ended up playing Van Dijk into all sorts of trouble. And at that point, I just went, oh my God, what's going on?
Yeah, get him out.
No, not for me. I maintain a high level of excitement about Keita. Do you know, I know you can touch on the key passes thing and the no assists. For me, the ball he plays through to Robertson against West Ham that puts it on a plate for Robertson to assist Salah is better than an assist in some ways. Like, the delicacy of that pass was everything that we saw him doing teeing up Timo Werner last season and the season before for Leipzig.
Yeah, it was good, don't get me wrong. But I do feel like the pass was 100% on. If he had have overhit that, there would have been uproar.
It was on, but it's the sort of pass you can get wrong without it looking like being wrong. Do you know what I mean? It's the kind of pass you can play and you can either get it very right or you can just make the right pass. And they're kind of a different thing. If he puts Robertson sort of further out, further to the byline, it's not quite as simple as basically giving a pass to Robertson with an instruction that, there you go, mate, you just roll this across and it's a goal.
Yeah, and that goes back to my earlier point that he started the season quite well. There were moments...
He started the season very well.
...where you could say, you're right, you know, we've signed a top-class player here. The problem is they're very much moments at the moment. So to summarise what I mean here, he looks at the age of 23, he looks like we've signed a 19-year-old who's got raw talent but hasn't developed properly. And that might be the instance because he hasn't played top-level football for very long.
Interestingly, he didn't make the grade at the first ever sort of European trial that he was given. I remember reading, I think it was a really impressive Mel Reddy article. There was a lot written about him, obviously. We had a year to get excited about him. Mm. There was something about him not being taken on by the French clubs when he was first spotted at Bodo Balde's training camps because they didn't think he was tactically aware enough. Now, I don't necessarily personally see this as a criticism of Keita, as I say. I think this is more about just the role he's being asked. I really do. Yeah. I mean, he operated everywhere for Leipzig. His national coach described him as the perfect eight, but Hasenhüttl, the old Leipzig manager, was saying that when he's got the ball at his feet, he's a weapon. Says it's crazy what he does. Had a look. Timo Werner did an article with 442 where he said Naby Keita is like Iniesta. Naby will be a world-class player because he has everything. This to me, like, I know tactically and technically you're looking about different things, and as you say, he clearly does have the talent on the ball. But I think describing him as raw tactically is like the best area to be deficient in some ways, because they're the things that you learn in time with training with the team and so on, and with Klopp.
Yeah, but I would also say that for me, that applies technically as well. And describing him like Iniesta, given his start for Liverpool, I just think that's absolute madness from Timo Werner.
But Timo Werner is one of the most likely players to know. And I mean, Timo Werner's played with some of the best footballers in this generation.
He has.
Timo Werner said that when he was starting up for Germany.
A very weak Bundesliga. And he had an absolute howler in the World Cup, didn't he, Werner?
Werner wasn't very good in the World Cup, but, you know, he's played with those kind of players.
Absolutely nothing to my point, to be fair. But when you say he's a top-class number eight, is he?
Because it wasn't me. It was, to be fair, it was the Guinea national manager. But,
like, probably, you know, hasn't had a lot to work with previously. I get it. Like, he was great for Leipzig. There's no doubt about it. He's great for Guinea, probably. I mean, I don't really watch any Guinea games, but clearly...
Oh, he's a national hero, isn't he? Like, he's a national hero.
He's a level above. But at the same time, I think it's his technical ability as well that is still very raw at the moment. And the misplaced passes and bad decision-making, particularly in the final third, which would explain his zero goals and assists, is really letting him down. And to be fair, when you're looking at a player like Coutinho who's gone, and I'm not saying Keita is your light for light because he's clearly a very different player, but for us in particular, we're after that midfielder who can unlock a midfield, whether it's with a pass or with a telling goal, and I just cannot see Keita providing that at this moment anyway. And that's one of the reasons why I've said to you offline that I'm so keen on Aaron Ramsey.
Yeah, I mean, that's a different debate in itself. What the point I'll go to is twofold here. I think, backing up what you're saying there, I think a lot of this comes down to sort of mental strength and confidence rather than technical ability. We've seen he's got it. I think the point you make about him not looking confident has ebbed and flowed with the team's confidence. He's looked good when we've looked good. I think that's fair to say. But in many ways, I think he's almost a victim of his own success or of his own strengths. He said the other day on LFC TV when he was asked for a Q&A type thing that his kind of key role on the pitch in his eyes is winning the ball back and giving it to forwards. I think he's been great at that. Like, his Tottenham away performance was really underrated, I thought.
Yeah, that's true. That is one of the big positives I'll give him credit for. Off the ball, winning the ball back, he's very good at breaking up the play.
He kind of does it silently. He's not like your kind of your typical destroyer midfielder, like a Torreira seems to look, where he's smashing into tackles and putting his physicality about. He kind of has a trait of being able to just pinch the ball and keep it cleanly, which, yeah, I wasn't really expecting from him.
Yeah, that's a good point, to be fair, because from what I expected him to be like, I thought he'd be a bit of a physical, gnarly bastard, and he's actually a bit of a wimp, isn't he?
He is. He's
very mild-mannered. He goes about his game quite sort of discreetly, I'd say.
Yeah.
And maybe that kind of applies to his mental strength as well. That it was question marks when we signed him about his fragility in terms of discipline.
Which seems like a wild thing rather than like a shy thing.
I know.
Yeah.
It's a strange one.
Yeah, I think the point you're making there about him looking lost kind of ties in with that. I've tweeted a few times on the Red Debate Twitter account saying he looks tactically lost. And I think he looks like a sheepish little boy in some ways. He does look, as you say, like a kid playing at times. He comes to life when he's got the ball. I think he's got the kind of first touch that you can watch all day. I know he's been misplacing passes and stuff, but he's the kind of player that when he gets the ball, I'm thinking every time he gets it, go on, Naby, go on. so he fills me with confidence in that way, but he does look like he doesn't know what he's being told. And I think the club are very aware of that. Did you see what Klopp said about him recently?
No, go on.
Well, it wasn't that recently, actually. It was after the Palace game. Klopp came out and said that he's a very shy person.
Yeah, I did see that.
He said he's not very extroverted on the pitch and he needs to settle a bit. And then he said that thing which was doing the rounds, saying everyone loves Naby, but we don't know if he loves us because he doesn't speak.
I mean, that's a bizarre thing to have when you're playing for a top club, isn't it? There aren't many players who have that kind of persona who play for a, you know, top four club. And I will say that goes on to one of what I think's working in his favour, but it also ties into my point, is that I think because he's a nice lad, he's getting a lot of leniency. And additionally, because he's 23, a bit more leniency, and he's not British. And I want to draw the comparison back to Oxlade once more. Do you remember the stick Oxlade was getting from not only our opposing fans, but our own fans about...
Mate, the League Cup game.
Playing well.
Yeah, do you remember the League Cup game against Leicester? I mean, we were abysmal that day, but there were people doing like video compilations of every Oxlade touch, and it was poor, but he was getting rattled by the Liverpool fans, wasn't he?
I mean, it's crazy that... Because the similarities are there, right? You've got Oxlade started slow, and by the end of the season was a key member of the first team. Cater seems to be going on a similar sort of path, but I don't get how he's not getting more criticised, because I do feel like I'm one of the only few that we speak to who are vocally critical about Cater and very underwhelmed, to be fair. But when it was Oxlade doing literally exactly the same, he was getting absolutely slaughtered.
I know, but I mean, Oxlade did come from a Premier League team, and people knew a lot more about Oxlade. I think you bringing Oxlade into this is sort of exemplifies my point, really, about it being sort of a tactical thing, and we do need to give him time. Like Klopp even said that. Klopp said, football wise, you can see the potential's outstanding, but we have to give him time. Like, I mean, there's, you know, the main thing that I've got to say, annoyed at Cater about and disappointed in him about, is that he didn't learn English. He knew he had a year, he knew he was coming here, and he can't speak a word of English, man.
Really poor, really poor. If that delays his bedding in process, then that's, I think it's like ridiculous that he didn't spend the time.
So do I. Now, I mean, I'm sure I couldn't learn German in a year, but I think the club are aware of this. There was an article recently, I think it might have even been last week, with Naby Keita apparently coming out and saying, you know, making a joke of it and saying, I don't understand Scouse yet, but I've given myself a 6-month target to learn English and I'm having lessons and stuff. Yeah. I think that was probably a bit of PR work from the club. And I actually think the Klopp thing, saying he's shy, was PR work, saying he doesn't talk and he's shy. I think that's probably PR work from Klopp as well, saying, listen, mate, you need to do this. You're playing in this country. You need to speak the language.
Yeah, 100%.
I mean, Jurgen Klopp's tactics would probably tie anyone inside out. I mean, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain's a clever boy. He's a well-educated boy, speaks perfect English. It took him a long time to learn Klopp's tactics. Keita can't even speak English. How's he supposed to learn?
it's a good point. I think the midfield positions, we've said on previous podcasts, but particularly for Liverpool, they're one of the hardest positions, I think, to play in the entire league, because they're so demanding.
As Fabinho, I'll tell you as well. Fabinho looks like he might make his first like proper start tonight, aside from that Carling Cup game. Have you got the statistics for that poll we ran on Twitter? Because you mentioned Oxlade. We asked Twitter about Keita and Oxlade. What were the Keita poll backs up your point there about not many people being outspoken about Keita. But what did they show when the?
Yeah. So we asked. The first question we asked was, are you worried about Naby Keita so far? And 67% said no, 33% said yes. We then followed that up with, do you think Naby Keita has had the impact so far that you were expecting? And interestingly, 79% then said no. And I probably would fall into that 79%.
So would I, but at the same time, I would not have expected us to be sat top of the league at this point.
That's true. And then lastly, I think this ties into the Oxlade point, but has the fan base's impression of Oxlade Chamberlain's ability and importance risen in his absence? And amazingly, 88% said yes.
I think they have. I think we're remembering Oxlade as being a bit better than he was because we're missing him.
Yeah, I agree. But I would also argue that that 88% is a bit of an indication that the original 67% who said they aren't worried about Cater actually are a little bit worried about Cater.
Yeah, because it feels like we need him back. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're missing Oxlade massively, I think, which is ridiculous to say, considering he only really became a first team starter for maybe 3 months.
I think we're missing what we're told Oxlade does. We're told Oxlade surges through the midfield. I mean, I know he had good performance, but I think we're missing more what we're told he does rather than what he does actively every game. Yeah. I think Oxlade's a good player, but if you said to me, you can have either Oxlade, Chamberlain or Keita in this Liverpool squad, I'm not picking Oxlade. No way.
I'd pick Oxlade.
Not for a one-off game, just for to have in the squad.
I'd still pick Oxlade.
Would you really?
Yeah, I think what he showed is far above anything than what Keita has shown so far.
Listeners, come to us in the comments with your thoughts on this. I'd be very keen to know what Twitter think. Now, I think a lot of that comes back to that hope and expectation thing. I think there's probably more hope placed in Keita than there is in Oxlade. But I agree. I think Oxlade's injury has made people a bit more expectant and hopeful that he'll come back and do good things.
Yeah, that's a separate debate, isn't it? I personally think that we're in real danger of him never coming back to that same level, but
Oxlade, yeah.
But that again puts more pressure on Naby Keita because we're now, if you take Lallana's injury woes into consideration, we're now in desperate need of that surging driving midfielder, which is what everyone thought Keita would be.
Fuck yeah,
mate! Back in January.
I still think that'll happen, but again, we can do a separate pod on that. Well, Smith, whilst we're talking about expectation, do you know what the pre-season odds were on the PFA Player of the Year? Who do you think would have been favourite, according to the bookies, for PFA Player of the Year?
Kane?
Nope.
Salah.
Salah was 10-1. Next favourite was...
Kane?
Nope.
De Bruyne,
12-1. Yeah. Next favourite?
Surely not Naby Keita.
No, not Naby Keita.
Hazard?
Hazard and Kane were both 14-1. Then you've got Sané at 16, Sterling at 18, and then a whole host of players at 20. So David Silva, Christian Eriksen, Paul Pogba, Aubameyang, Sadio Mane, and Naby Keita.
At 20-1? Jesus.
Yeah.
I mean, that's mental.
The expectation was so high on him.
So high.
Do you think that's an added pressure for him? He says in his Q&As he doesn't care about that sort of stuff and he doesn't care who the opposition are. Surely, I mean, he's a human being. Surely he does. Surely that affects him.
I think it is added pressure on him. I think that and the transfer fee and the fact that we had to wait so long to get him, it's all kind of built him up to be on the pedestal, really, isn't it?
Don't remember. I mean, it's kind of like a player being out injured for a long time and you expect them to come back and you're being really hopeful that they do well. The year of waiting for Keita was painful in some ways.
Particularly painful given what happened with Coutinho.
And
again, that probably played as a disadvantage to him because...
You were begging for him in January.
Absolutely begging for him, yeah. Desperate for him. But Oxlade-Chamberlain's form after that then sort of lessened the blow of not getting Keita in January.
I think the same applies to Wijnaldum and Milner as well. I mean, Wijnaldum and Milner have been undeniably two of our best players this season. It's strange to bring them into a Keita argument, but they're obviously playing up. They had a year to also worry that their place might be going.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, yeah. Wijnaldum, we're both big fans of him, aren't we? But his transformation into the holding midfield role is been incredible, I think. I think he's been such a good player so far this season.
Ah, Ginny's brilliant, yeah.
But I think, again, like that's a slight indication of Keita's sort of in and out form because they've been allowed to, you know, cement their place, really. And I think when we first lined up, West Ham was the first game, wasn't it? When we first lined up against West Ham, we weren't quite sure who was going to fill those centre mid spots. It was Milner, Wijnaldum, and Keita. But you look, you know, Fabinho had a pretty full pre-season, so we weren't sure how so his introduction would be. Hendo was just coming back and so on. So I think at the start of the season, Keita was an absolute...
needed to go straight in.
Yeah,
he needed to, really.
But I just think it's an indication that his form hasn't been particularly good. The fact that he's now, regardless of the injury for Guinea, he's now sort of in and out of the team. It's become a bit bitty so far, hasn't it?
Yeah, the injuries haven't helped. But the other thing to say about that is that, like, as well as Milner and Wijnaldum and co having a year to sweat on the idea that this world-class 23-year-old Guinean international is going to come in and probably take their place, he also had a year of watching us, thinking, I can't wait to play for these boys, seeing us tear teams to shit in the Champions League, get to the Champions League final. And then he turns up, and aside from the West Ham game, his mates are absolute dog shit. Like, to be honest, he wasn't expecting to come and get pumped by Palace away. He wasn't expecting to come on for 20 at the end of the Leicester game and not even see the ball because none of his teammates can keep hold of it. He wasn't expecting to watch us play games like that dire performance against Huddersfield and suffer that, albeit victories, not play football in the way he'd been watching. I think a lot of the criticism aimed at Keita has been sort of enveloped by how disappointing we've been as an entirety.
Yeah, and I think the disappointments in what we've actually been in terms of the attacking potency is kind of gone, but the defensive stability has really come to the fore. That is kind of what falls on Keita, though, because it's not going to come from Gini Wijnaldum. It's not going to come from Henderson. You know, it's unlikely to come from Milner. You're looking.
But
at...
it did last season. It did last season, though.
But did it?
Not. It didn't come from them. It came from the system that they were an integral part of.
But you would argue that it's those two of those three that I just mentioned paired with, at the start of last season, Coutinho and then Oxlade coming through. So you're pairing them with someone who has that ability to unlock the midfield. And I think we're woefully short right now on Keita's current form. We're really, really short in unlocking teams. And I've personally felt that over the last 4 weeks, we've looked pretty just without creativity.
Yeah. I mean, I think Keita does, unfortunately for him, make us more solid as well.
Yeah. His defensive abilities are good, aren't they?
But he's a weird one because he's played up front. Like, he played as the number nine for a bit against Tottenham. He played wide left for a bit against West Ham. He played basically left, secondary left back against City. So, I mean, yeah, he's obviously got such a full skill set but maybe Klopp doesn't really even know how to use him best yet, which also wouldn't be too surprising.
Yeah, that's true. And that's, I guess, one of the positives that you're hoping that he really does grow into the role. And the good news for him is that he's getting a lot of game time early on. So even though he is rotating out the team at the moment, he's still getting decent minutes. And if he hadn't have got injured in the Napoli game, he probably would have played, you know, the majority of the game.
It's annoying.
Intention tonight as well.
I thought we were much better when he was on the pitch against Napoli. That might not necessarily be about him because I did think he was giving the ball away.
But... I totally disagree with that. I thought it was absolutely awful. Every time he touched the ball, he gave it away, basically.
Yeah, but in terms of territorial stuff, we were playing much higher up the pitch before Henderson came on in his place.
True. Yeah, true.
I maintain I'm really excited about Naby Keita. I genuinely can't wait to watch him play again for us. And yeah, I'm really hoping that's on Saturday against Cardiff. But who's going to... Should we move on to tonight? Who's going to play in midfield tonight?
So we're a bit short, aren't we? I mean, Fabinho's... Yeah. pretty much been told that he's going to be starting. You've got Henderson and Keita both ruled out. So I want us to go as strong as we can possibly be. I see this, even though it's against Red Star, no disrespect to them, but I see this as a really key game for us that we have to get two wins.
We have to.
So I don't want to fuck around with people like Lallana. I want us to go as strong as possible. And if Fabinho is going to play, then that means Milner and Gini alongside him.
Mm.
What do you reckon?
I would probably play one of the more advanced midfielders. I would probably play Fabinho, Wijnaldum and Shaqiri or Lallana. I'm thinking I'd like to see the main front three play, so probably Shaqiri and with Wijnaldum and Fabinho. I've got a sneaky feeling Shaqiri's going to score tonight. You know, it being Serbian opposition, he'll do the little flags at the Eagle celebration.
I mean, if it's any of the other players, I would like to see Shaqiri slot into that role, but just because he's a lot more attacking, and I really wasn't impressed with Lallana against Huddersfield. As much as I like him, he just
you're a Lallana fan as well, aren't you? You usually fly the flag for Lallana.
Yeah, and I still think he can be an asset. Certainly not off the left wing.
Oh my God, what was that about? Yeah,
that was fucked up, wasn't it? I just don't think he's quite match fit at the moment. And
can't be, can he? No.
Shaqiri's bursting at the seams, isn't he? So I'd like to see a better run out.
I think Lallana starting there may have even been because, as you say, he can't be fit yet. I think that's a slightly safer position to sort of line up a less fit player. Whereas if you're playing in the middle of the pitch, you need to be able to put the shift in tactically and energetically.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, which again, moving it back to Keita, in my mind is tells a lot about Klopp trusting Keita because he has just chucked him in. He didn't need to do that, really. I know Henderson came back from the World Cup, but he didn't need to do that. But anyway. There we go. Are we winning tonight, then, mate? Are we winning?
Yes, we are. I think this could be the one that really gets us back on form. I'm really hoping that we put in a 4 or 5, a bit like what PSG did to them in the last game.
Yeah, Anfield full of Liverpool fans tonight as well. No Red Star fans traveling.
Yeah, no Red Star fans, which will be
to the game anyway.
Interesting. Yeah. I've heard that they're a little bit tricky. So from what I did actually watch quite a lot of the Napoli game. And their masters.
Watch Napoli against Red Star.
I watched quite a bit of it. Yeah.
Listeners, look at that background work from Mr. Chris Smith there.
Scouting the Oppo. Had it on record and so on, and watched quite a bit of it. But they seem.
Do you know who plays wide forward for them?
Yeah, Marco Marin.
Marco Marin.
Yeah.
Ex-Chelsea, yeah. I'd completely forgotten he existed.
Well, if he pops up and scores, then that's a bit
apparently
of a
he's a doubt, so.
Oh, is he? Yeah, I mean, they're not. They haven't got a lot of threat. What they are pretty good at is wasting time and sort of using all the tricks they've got to, kill the game out, which is what they did really well against Napoli. And they did it quite well.
Yeah, that sounded like us.
For like 15, 20 minutes against PSG, but then If you score early, I think if we get the early goal, we'll then run right.
Yeah, that negates all that sort of stuff, doesn't it? Early goal for us. I'm going Reds -4 tonight. I'm going bigger. We'll win 5-0.
There you go.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much for tuning in, everyone. And before we go, we'd just like to divert your attention to our website. Really, the podcast perhaps not the best format to advertise artwork, but we've paired up with Homeless Ghost Prints, who do some brilliant kind of Sabutio-esque Liverpool prints of classic players. Head over to our website, www.thereddebate.com. They've kindly given us a 30% discount code for listeners and readers. So head over there, check them out. Even if you're going just to look at the pictures, they're pretty awesome. And of course, if you don't already follow us on Twitter, we are at The Red Debate or at Red Debate Chris to get hold of Mr. Smith here. The blog's active on our website. We're keen for feedback and subscribers as always. Thanks very much for listening.